Hi, I'm Steve Clemens, and I have a question. As Republican governors dump refugees in different cities across America, does either party really have a plan for immigration? Let's get to the bottom line. Human beings are now being used as pawns, literally pawns, in America's culture wars. Republican governors have been organizing bus trips and more recently air flights for Latin American refugees who've shown up in their states, and now they're sending them off to Democratic states. These refugees, many of whom are applying for asylum, were promised housing and jobs if they got on the transport, but they were duped. It's as cruel as it sounds, and it's only getting worse. Last week, Texas sent busloads of migrants to the residence of Vice President Kamala Harris in Washington, D.C. And Florida flew 48 migrants in Texas to the posh island of Martha's Vineyard. Yes, an island off the coast of Massachusetts. The Republican governors who are doing this want to spark a national debate on immigration with a few weeks left before the midterm elections. Well, will it work? Can Americans agree on any immigration policy? Is there a middle ground between zero tolerance and open borders? Today, we're talking with Farrah Stockman, a journalist who's covered politics, social movements, and race, and is a member of the New York Times editorial board. She's the author of American Made, What Happens to People When Work Disappears. And Tom Nichols, a writer at The Atlantic magazine, former professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College. He's the author of Our Own Worst Enemy, The Assault from Within on Modern Democracy. Thank you both for joining me today. You almost simultaneously had the headlines about this migrant stunt, about the movement of people, the shipping of people to Martha's Vineyard. And both of you had interesting takes on America's migration, refugee challenges right now. And I'd love to start with you, Farrah, because you started by saying we have a deeper problem here, which is the story of America is being the story for the huddled masses yearning to be free, coming here from problems abroad, seeking asylum in many cases. Tell us how you saw this issue of what Governor DeSantis did in grabbing a number of people, really seducing them on the plane and dropping them in Martha's Vineyard.
Well, first of all, it's just weird. Like, how does the governor of Florida send an operative to Texas to bring them to Martha's Vineyard? It's a strange story. His people are arguing that it's preemptive, right? That these are people from Venezuela who are going to end up in Florida, and that's why he gets to insert himself in this way. But it's very odd because he's kind of getting in on something that Governor Greg Abbott has been doing for months now, which is busing migrants to sanctuary cities, quote unquote, in Washington, D.C., and then New York and Chicago. They're trying to get attention, right? But and it's working, frankly. If this is a stunt, it's working.
Well, Tom, let me ask you about this side of shipping refugees and migrants to various cities in the country. I saw this kind of thing a year ago in Eastern Europe. I was visiting at the time Tallinn, Estonia, and we were listening to the state minister of the security, the avant-garde security issues they were facing. And they said Lukashenko in Belarus was sending folks over to Iraq to pick up Iraqi refugees, promising them a better life in Europe and dropping them off on the border, lots and lots of people on the border of Lithuania, and that this was, you know, creating lots of tensions for the government in Lithuania. And lo and behold, we see the source. I don't see anybody talking about that from a year ago. But is this something you think people watched and this is sort of a copycat exercise?
I don't think DeSantis watched that. I think what DeSantis watched was Tucker Carlson back in July saying, wouldn't it be great if we dumped a lot of people on Martha's Vineyard? But, you know, the thing is, there is an immigration problem in the United States. We do have problems with our border. I mean, if you go back 25 years to the Democratic Party platform, when Bill Clinton was running, he talks about how, you know, in the early 90s, America didn't even really have borders. But what DeSantis did is completely separate from that. This is just a kind of form of cultural warfare that's meant to primarily to advance Ron DeSantis's position in the coming Republican presidential primary. And there's just a kind of a juvenile mean-spiritedness to it that really has nothing to do with immigration, but everything to do with turning to your voting base and saying, see, I made people in Massachusetts mad because Massachusetts is bad and Martha's Vineyard is full of liberals. And in a strange way, I think it backfires because, as Farah said, it brings attention to it, but it, I think it convinces a lot of people across the country that only really terrible people worry about immigration.
Well, let me.
Of course, we should all worry about it.
Well, let me show you a poll that was done recently on whether the United States is experiencing an invasion at the southern border. Look at these numbers. So we have 76% of Republicans think there's an invasion at the southern border, 40% of Democrats. And so say what you will, that 40% is still a big number when you look at that, Tom. And I just want to note that in your article, you go to kind of, you know, lengths to say what you just said. We have a problem at the southern border. You identify yourself as a conservative who's looked at this. You didn't just call these, unofficial folks. You said these are illegal folks that have come into the country. How has your view changed? And when you look at these numbers, what do you think the credible way is to deal with that sense of threat that many Americans are feeling?
I am both the grandson of immigrants on both sides of my family, and I still think of myself as an immigration hawk. I actually think the two things are related, that, I cherish immigration and I want it done properly because that's the strength of America. What I don't want and where I've changed my view is, a hardline policy at the border that's implemented purely for sadistic kicks, purely for kind of, these sadistic motives that are meant to advance the political careers of a couple of guys in Texas and Florida, that's not a policy. Because the other thing America is about being humane, is about being a refuge for people. And I mean, we have to have the rule of law, we have to have order. And I think for people who want a strong border and a regularized immigration system, that's really important. But I mean, that doesn't mean that I would ever sign on, and I don't think any of us should sign on for the intentional tormenting of children as a deterrent, which is what happened over the past few years with things like family separation. There has to be something in between throwing up our hands and saying, well, there's nothing we can do about it, and saying, well, the only thing we can do about it is to put a bunch of, sadistic jerks in charge of tormenting people. I mean, that's not what America is. It's certainly not what America is to me.
Farah, in your piece, which I highly recommend to people, is so powerful in kind of looking at the ethic of America, about what it was about. And I just want to have you, in your words, share with our viewers what seeking asylum means and compare, say, a few years ago in terms of the number of asylum seekers that were coming into this country versus what we're seeing today virtually every month in staggering levels.
Yeah, so we've seen about 1 million people enter the country in the last, since Biden has become president, and about 150,000 of them have managed to seek asylum. There's many more that are able to seek asylum through this process. I think they have about a year to do it. And that's a similar number, actually, that came in under similar circumstances under Trump. And I just have to say that this has broken the system. The sheer number of people that have come in can't be handled by our courts. Our courts have been very archaic. Up until very recently, they were using paper files. And so the amount of time that it takes to get a hearing has gone from like 45 days to 4.5 years. So now you can wait years before you even get a hearing. And it could be like 7 years before your case is actually decided. And so what I said in my piece is that our system is chaotic enough that it actually has become a self-perpetuating problem, because if it takes so many years to get a hearing, then people are incentivized to apply for asylum. It's not easy to go through the process, but if you go through the process, then you get work authorization after 150 days. And so it's, I think that this is one of the problems. We need a system that's more modern, that's more efficient, and that's more fair, where people who actually deserve asylum, people who qualify for asylum, can make it, right? And can get what they are, what they deserve, and where you can kind of weed out the people who are just trying to skip the line, skip the immigration line. The other thing I have to say is that this is not just something that's happened under Biden. It's been a growing problem. Right. Like, this backlog has been growing for years and years and years, and we're actually seeing, because of the hiring of more immigration judges, we're actually seeing the system start to work out the kinks and start to operate faster. And this is a year that we've seen the completion of more cases.
While that may be the case, but you make a really interesting point in your piece, is saying that, you know, from an incentive structure, those people coming across the border now have an incentive to ask for asylum, whether or not they are deserving or not. And so those of us that are looking, you know, a few steps aside, say, you know, they look at the numbers, they see what's going on. I understand there's, you know, horror and impunity and rapes and killings in other parts of the world that people may be trying to escape. But not all of those people are there, and the numbers have surged to such levels that it's created a lot of skepticism. Let me just show you both, you know, these numbers. I mean, because I would be worried. But if you look at these numbers here, support for legal status for immigrants has really declined from overall 65% of the country. It was a bit, very big in 2018, to about 51% and still falling now. And I guess my question is, when we look at legal status, you know, Tom, the you switch in your article. You say, I have now moved my view from being prickly about legality and all of this, and because of this sadistic, what you call a sadistic stunt, you think we need to be now much more permissive. But most of America is not with you on this, because they look and they don't trust the asylum route anymore. So tell me where I'm wrong.
Well, I don't, unfortunately, I don't trust the people that used to be my fellow immigration hawks anymore. And what did it was not this stunt. I was going to make a comment earlier when Farrah was talking about asylum seekers. You know, the dumbest thing is that DeSantis took a bunch of people from Venezuela, where the prima facie case for asylum is probably pretty strong. You know, he took the one group of people where you really could say, yeah, this is probably this sure looks a lot like asylum seeking. But then, of course, the problem is that everybody says, well, if that's the way you get in, then I'm seeking asylum too. That suddenly a million people say I'm seeking asylum. And of course, asylum does not mean that life in my country is terrible and life in your country is better. And so, you know, I have not changed my view to say, well, just, you know, let everybody in and we'll sort it out. But to say things like, you know, what really radicalized me here was not DeSantis, but the family separation policy. That's when I stepped back and I said, you know, there are people who claim to be care about this border issue who really are just doing terrible things. The policy was to take children away from their parents and send them into the American kind of foster system or immigration hell, you know, where there was simply no infrastructure to deal with them because nobody had done that on that scale before. And to do it as a deterrent, literally to cause pain to parents and children as a message to others not to come here. Again, old school law and order, rule of law, conservative, that does not mean inflicting pain on toddlers and babies intentionally as a warning to other people. And that's when I kind of felt radicalized away from some of the harder views I took.
Farrah, let me ask you. So the experience being felt by Texas, by Arizona, by Florida, southern states in this, where liberals elsewhere in the country are basically saying we should be opening and welcoming, but they don't have the problems, they don't have the stress and the financial issues. And some liberals and progressives are beginning to say, now we're getting it, which means that DeSantis and Governor Abbott may have actually started a conversation that could go in a constructive course, at least. I'd love to get your mapping of this.
I was just looking at all the comments on my stories, and a lot of them were from people who said, I'm liberal, and yet I feel for these places that are having a huge number of migrants come in because we're tired. We have been volunteering in San Antonio or helping them, or we are, you know, like there is a sense that places like Boston and places like New York haven't had to deal with what the border states have been dealing with. And you don't have to be sadistic to say it requires resources, which the federal government has actually been giving to places like San Antonio, but it does require resources to house people, to teach kids who only know a different language. It's not free. It costs money, and it can be a demographic transformation of a place. And so, look, my mother she grew up in Mississippi. She's a Black woman from Mississippi. And on the immigration issue, she sounds conservative sometimes. She's like, those jobs that these migrants are taking should go to Black people who've been here all this time. And so, you know, there is, it's a trade-off. And a lot of times people who are well off, who have college degrees and who want to hire, you know, babysitters for cheap or lawn people to do their lawns, people to work on their houses, right? Those are the immigrants. And we're, you know, so we like to have folks who are coming in who are going to work for less. That's good for us. The Americans that are competing with them in those industries don't like to have them coming in. And frankly, even recently naturalized Hispanics who are their closest competitors are some of the most hawkish on immigration that you'll find. Why do you think Trump got a boost in 2020 from some of those Hispanic communities? A lot of it has to do with economic competition. And I think if Democrats don't acknowledge it or understand it, they're going to lose that debate. Because poll numbers, I mean, you saw it yourself, this 40% of Democrats.
Well, Tom, you know, I'd love you to break down the politics of this a little bit. You know, President Trump has said America is full. America's full up, folks, and we don't need more. Now, when I go around the country and see the job shortages and the people, I keep wondering, wow, something's gone on here where there's a disconnect, where restaurants can't run, small businesses can't run. You know, large businesses are having a very hard time finding workers and retaining workers in this environment. So I guess, what are the politics, as you look forward to the midterms and then to 2024, of the America is full message?
Well, you know, some of the people that agree most strongly with Trump and are the most anti-immigrant actually live in places where there aren't any immigrants. You know, when you hear people in Iowa and New Hampshire in Montana complaining about immigrants, that's a message they're picking up from the conservative media and the conservative kind of, you know, messaging ecosystem. But, and I think this dovetails back to Farrah's point, immigration is a crisis. It's not just a problem, it's a crisis. And if the Democratic Party, if a big share of the Democratic Party's only answer to that is to dismiss any discussion about immigration as racism, for example, and say, well, it's just racism. It's not racism. There are people who want to have a diverse and welcoming country. But, you know, again, going back to the Democrats of the 90s, to Bill Clinton, you can't just not have a border. And so the problem is that this stunt, to go back to the whole Florida and Texas thing, I disagree that they've opened a conversation. I think they've created a kind of stupid binary that even I feel pulled into of saying, well, what are, and as I say in the piece, if my choice is Ron DeSantis and a bunch of goons pulling pranks, or Joe Biden and the system we have now where we kind of muddle through, I'll take the system now and we'll muddle through it, because that I can't sign on to that other approach. So I don't think that's really I don't think that's really a productive way to go about it. But the entire country has to become invested, and the key word here was resources.
Right.
The country has to be involved in resources, not just for education, not just for housing, but because of enforcement. And I'll just finish by saying, you know, I'm old enough, Steve, that I was a young guy in Washington when the 1986 Immigration Reform Act was passed, where, you know, Ronald Reagan signed this amnesty, and it was kind of a Lucy in the football thing.
And that was supposed to get it all done, right?
We're going to get it all done. We're never doing it again. This is a one and done that fixes our problems. And, you know, 35 years later, here we are.
But let me ask you, Farah, what should Vice President Kamala Harris be doing right now that she's not?
What should she be doing? I mean, look, the system is broken for a reason. It's broken by design. I think our whole restaurant economy in New York is basically balancing on the idea that undocumented labor is working in the kitchens. Our agriculture sector is based on the idea of migrant labor, some of whom are undocumented. And so, you know, we have a system that wants people to be in limbo. It doesn't want to give them citizenship. It doesn't want to give them an American wage, but it needs their labor. And so that we have to come to terms with that as a society. I personally think that we need more legal pathways. I think a lot of people just don't like the chaos and the idea that anybody can just show up and walk in. That's worrisome for a lot of people, not just conservatives. So we need to get a sense of controlled flows, knowing who's coming in and keeping track of people, making sure that they're the skills that we need, frankly, and that there are also alternatives for people who are just, frankly, extremely desperate and in need.
Tom, let me give you 30 seconds on tips for Vice President Harris.
Well, I think her trip to Central America, which was kind of her maiden foreign policy speech, did not go well. Immigration is always, you know, anybody who comes here, as Farah said, you know, this idea of just you can just kind of walk in. You know, I think Biden's always been a little better about that,
right.
but the left flank of the Democratic Party really has to understand that, you know, there are people that this is a legitimate concern and not just, you know, Greg Abbott and Ron DeSantis, you know, pulling sadistic pranks.
Right.
And so that messaging, I think, has to change. And, you know, again, I'll just go back and say better speech writing, better staffing. And also don't, you know, going down to the border and going to Central America, I don't think really accomplishes a lot. I think speaking to the American people about this more directly would help.
Right. Well, let me thank you both. Veteran journalists and authors Farah Stockman of The New York Times and Tom Nichols of The Atlantic Magazine. Thanks for these articles and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So what's the bottom line? America has a major immigration ulcer that's getting worse and worse. Hundreds of thousands of people a month are fleeing their homes in Latin America and trying to get into the United States. Some die trying. Some are beaten, raped, trafficked. Some just need a job, and others are trying to escape the impunity in their own countries. Either way, they're driven by desperation. Otherwise, they just would never pick up their families and go through this ordeal. There are no good answers. Nations must control their borders. Or guess what? They cease to be nations. At the same time, there is a humane way to deal with the problem, and that's certainly not what we saw in the ruthless exploitation of refugees for political purposes. Putting random people on buses and planes and sending them off to random places where they have no connections, really? The U.S. has never been able to tackle this issue in a lasting, logical way. Now the political right has found an issue to gain traction. And now Congress, in my view, on a bipartisan basis, needs to invest in real solutions. And that's the bottom line.